Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Laura and I am an alcoholic.
Hello.
Hi, Laura.
We will start our meeting with a serenity prayer. God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, stop.
Okay, we open the meeting with the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from three speakers from the Bucklands Beach Group who meet every Wednesday night. Our speakers this morning will be sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. Shasta, would you like to share?
Thanks, Laura. Hi, I'm Shasta and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shasta.
And for a long time I thought my drinking was normal and I surrounded myself with people who drank like me and I didn't see that it was a problem. But I constantly had that feeling inside that I couldn't stand myself. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. And I was always looking for the next thing that was going to make me happy. You know, I always thought it was the perfect combination of the right house, the right boyfriend, the right job, the right country to live in. And, you know, nothing seems to make anything okay. And I constantly felt like I was running. And I found that I have a head that goes 100 miles an hour, and when I drank, that just melted away, and I felt okay. And I thought the Shasta that drank was the real me. I thought that I was funnier and that I was more confident, and I thought that I could do anything. And so for me, it became a matter of drinking every day. And, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have my glass of wine next to my bed in the morning, and having that glass of wine felt as though I could really face the day. It felt like it was the only thing that could make everything bearable. And I was just constantly on this little hamster wheel of just getting by. And, you know, and I thought that this is as good as life was going to get. And my life got really small. My world got really small. And I lived for 5 o'clock to roll around at work, and I'd be, you know, down to the bottle store and then home. And actually, my drinking story was pretty pathetic. You know, it was nothing glamorous. It was kind of flash bang over. I didn't drink for very long, and I came into AA really quite young. You know, I always thought that if nobody knows, then it's not happening. And I did a lot of hiding. I hid a lot of my drinking. And, yeah, honestly thought that if nobody knows, then it's not happening. And I just lived in this deluded world, constantly thinking that I'm okay and that I'll figure this out, and that it's not the alcohol, it's everything around me. And once those circumstances change and everything else is sorted, then I'll be okay. And life just continued to get worse and my drinking progressed, you know, and they say that in our big book that drinking, you know, alcoholism is progressive, and that's exactly what I found. And eventually I was found at work in a car park, drunk, and sent to hospital. And I was sent to a detox facility. And it was there that two AA members came along and they shared their experience, strength and hope similar to this. It was the first time in my life that I heard somebody say out loud exactly how I felt on the inside. Because I had thought to myself that, you know, if I don't say it out loud, then it's not happening. I'd pushed everything that I was feeling down. And this guy shared, and he pretty much told my story. And, you know, I thought that I was the only person in the world that felt that way. I thought I was the only person that couldn't figure this out. And I always thought that's all I need to do is just figure this out, try harder, pull my socks up, there's something wrong with me, I can figure this out. And I couldn't figure this out. And, you know, that it was this guy shared his story, and I thought, well, if he can go through what he's gone through and he's okay, then maybe there's hope for me too. And, you know, I was 23 when I came into AA, and so I thought that there's no way that I could be an alcoholic. And I started coming to AA meetings because I was lost and I didn't feel that there was any other way that I could get through this. And, this is that one man gave me that bit of hope that there was a way out. So I gave it a try. And when I did come into AA meetings, I heard people share about the things that they'd lost. And, you know, they'd lost marriages and they'd lost homes and children and families and things. And I thought, well, no, I haven't done any of that, so I can't be an alcoholic. But what I could relate to was the thoughts and the feelings and, you know, that stuff on the inside that people described, and that loneliness and just that self-loathing, and I could relate to that. And I've learnt in AA that it's not about how much you drink, whether you're a woman or a man, what family background you come from. You know, it's how I feel on the inside, that mental obsession that drives me to do all that ridiculous behaviour, and that physical allergy that I have, that once I have that first drink, I can't stop. And then that's what I've learnt in AA. And, you know, I've been introduced to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous through coming to meetings. I didn't understand it at first, and, you know, they have the banners on the walls and words from 1900 and something that freaked me out, and I couldn't understand any of it. But all I knew was that I didn't want what I had, and I needed to find another way out. And so I heard people say, you know, get yourself a sponsor. And I thought, okay, what is this and how do I do this? And I've learned that it's someone who has what I want, someone who's worked the 12 steps, and someone who's willing to take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so my sponsor today, she's taken me through the big book, which is great because I don't understand it, and she's helped me to understand it. And she's helped me work the 12 steps, and I've found that this is the only thing that's given me any relief from alcoholism. And there's a lot of talk about God in AA, and at first that freaked me out, but I've learned that it's just about having a higher power or something greater than myself that I can trust in. And for me, my idea of a higher power started off with a GPS in my car, you know, like a little nav man, TomTom. And I was sitting in my car, and my grandmother hopped in my car with me, and I popped the address into the GPS, and I knew where I wanted to get to, but I didn't know Auckland very well at the time, so I didn't know how to get there. And then, you know, my grandmother says, Shasta, how does it know where we are? And I said, I don't know. And, you know, it says, turn right. So I'm driving along and I turn right, and, you know, I don't question the GPS. If it says turn right, I turn right. I don't argue with it, and I just completely trust that this GPS is going to get me to wherever I need to get to. And, you know, my grandmother's sitting there going, what, how does it know where we're going? And she just had all these questions, and I had no answers, but all I knew was that I trusted this little machine in my car completely handed over my life to this little machine, that I'm going to be okay and I'm going to get to where I need to get to. And that's what I find a higher power or God of my understanding is for me. It's something that I don't fight and I trust in. And, you know, I know today that everything's going to be okay because I've tried to figure this out on my own. You know, I've tried to stop drinking many different ways. I've tried moving. I've tried fad diets because for some reason I thought that might work. you know, I've tried lots of different things, and none of it has worked. None of the things that I've tried on my own through my own thinking has worked, but this has. And it's, you know, I'm really grateful to AA for showing me another way of living, and life's a whole lot simpler today. I don't have all the dramas that went on with drinking. I don't wake up in the morning and wonder how I got to where I got to, or what did I do the night before, who did I ring, who did I offend, and it's a much freer way of living. And it has been difficult, and I've had to work at it, but it's so rewarding at the end. You know, well, it's never the end. It's got to, you know, this is something that I have to continue to work at, and I continue to learn loads of different things. So I'm really grateful to AA, and thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Jess.
You're on 104.6 FM with the Alcoholics AA meeting on air, and we're with the Bucklands Beach group this morning that meet on a Wednesday night, obviously at Bucklands Beach. Dave, would you like to share?
Yeah, thanks. I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave. Dave.
My drinking, right from the get-go, I realise now only in hindsight, was always alcoholic. Once I started drinking, I had no off switch. I just kept going, and only things like, you know, passing out, getting arrested, or getting knocked out, or sometimes all of the above, was the end of my drinking for that moment. Right from the beginning, I couldn't stop. But I didn't think I was an alcoholic, because at that stage, I didn't drink every day. took many years as my alcoholism progressed to get to the stage where I was drinking every day, and only then did I think I might have had a problem. Still at the time, I really didn't think, you know, it was going to be that bad, and I thought I'd be able to stop if I really, really wanted to. But something I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know, the reason I couldn't stop is because I was powerless over alcohol. You know, I had lost, in the end, the choice of whether I was going to drink or not. And doesn't matter how much I fought against it, you know, I was in a losing battle. And you know, in retrospect, thinking back on my drinking, I didn't really have a problem. I didn't think I had a problem with drinking. I really had a problem with sobriety, you know. I didn't like being sober, and I didn't know how to live a life like a normal person. I had to have something else to make me feel better. I was irritable, restless, and discontent, and I was not happy with the reality. I always thought there needed to be something a little bit more, and I found that with alcohol, and it worked for quite a few years. You know, I was able to be the person wanted to be. You know, the life of the party, and I thought it was a lot more fun. You know, in the end, it took everything away from me. Respect from family, friends. In fact, I really didn't have many friends left when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was also very unemployable. lots of problems with the law, of course. But it was really what was happening on the inside which really matters, and that was that I had a lot of self-loathing, and, you know, I was very spiritually sick. It took a lot of desperation, and I had to be completely beaten before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was right before I came in, I was that desperate and that beaten that I actually cried out to a God that I didn't even believe in, because I used to be an atheist. I believed that there was no such thing as God, and but I tell you what, there's no atheists in the trenches, and I wouldn't say it was a prayer, it was more like a whinge. You know, God, just remove me from this planet. And something happened in that moment. I just stopped fighting, I guess. I just kind of gave up. I had this ego deflation and just found this bit of humility in that moment. I gave myself to the spirit of the universe, or whatever it's called. I have no idea. I'm not a religious person, I have to say. I found a bit of spirituality, though. I gave myself to this higher power. And in that moment, I knew it was going to be okay, but I had to get myself, you know, I had to get myself well, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was that beaten. I came in, I got a sponsor, because I was that beaten. I didn't know what to do. I got a sponsor, and as a result of getting that sponsor, this man, he took me through this 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. These steps have definitely saved my life. I have a new way of thinking. I am 2 years sober now. Very early on, whilst working the steps, the obsession and desire to drink was completely removed. And that is a miracle all in itself. This is something I couldn't do myself. I couldn't think my way out of this. I tried many different ways to give up drinking. Psychiatrists, different medication. I even tried acupuncture. And, you know, and nothing seemed to work. These steps of this program, I'm not sure at what point exactly. I think it probably was the third step, where I surrendered myself over to a higher power. But all I know is that it works. It really does. I'm 2 years sober now, as I said before, and I'm comfortable within myself. I no longer have the obsession to drink. I have to do a few things to maintain that. Amongst meetings, I still have to keep working the steps. It's never finished. And a big part of my sobriety and keeping sober is helping other alcoholics. I think that's the real basis of Alcoholics Anonymous, is one alcoholic helping another. One thing I certainly know about my alcoholism is that I'm, as an alcoholic, I'm selfish and self-centred. My favourite subject is often me, and I get plagued with often the times of waves of self-pity, and it's all about self, self-centred, self, self-reliant, self, 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 and, you know, and that's the worst place for me to be. But I find if I go out and help another alcoholic, my problems die of neglect. You know, I'm completely taken out of my self-pity and self-obsession, you know, and I can reconnect. I can reconnect with the world. I can reconnect with the reality. I'm a free man now. So, I'm very, very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I tell you what, if I hadn't still been working after, you know, 2 years of being sober, and if I wasn't still gaining something from it, I would have left it. This is the longest thing I've done consistently in my life, and it's because it works, and it keeps working, and it keeps getting better. The more I put into it, the more I get out of it. I'm a very, very grateful man today, so thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. You're on 104.6 FM with the Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. Hi, Matt. Would you like to share?
Thanks, Laura. Hi, everyone. My name's Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Matt.
And when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that alcohol comes in bottles and alcoholism comes in people. And my journey down the road of alcoholism began when I was a child. And it seemed that we lived a pretty normal life, I believed, when I was a kid. Everything was hunky-dory, you know. We just ticked along, mum, dad, brother, sister, and everything seemed pretty normal. And then when I was 11, my dad killed himself, and I didn't know how to deal with that. It basically turned my world upside down. My dad was my best mate, and we used to go to church on a regular basis, you know, and I was forced to sing in the church choir, and, you know, we were good Christian people, and then all of a sudden, you know, this God took my dad away from me and just shattered my whole existence. So I did the only thing that I knew, and I withdrew from society, you know. So I spent my teenage years sat in my bedroom on my own. I didn't like to go to school. I got out of it as often as I could. Mum tried to keep everything as normal as she possibly could, and she did her best. But there was always something missing. I never fit. There was never enough. And there began my journey into lack. When I was 16, I started to come a little bit out of my shell. And we used to go. I started hanging about with some new lads at school, and we went out to play football. And just across the road there was a pub. So we used to go and we used to play football for 4 or 5 hours, and then we'd go and have a pint in the pub. And the local landlord used to say to us, "Look, I know you're 16," he said, "but as long as you keep your heads down, you know," he said, "I don't mind you coming in for a couple." He said, "If we get any complaints, I'm going to ask you to leave. I want you to go quietly, and then you can come back in a couple of days." So we thought that was great, and often called in for a pint after we'd been for a game of football. Over the next 6 months, the football got less and less, and the pints got more and more. And, you know, I found a solution that enabled me to fit in society. I have found a solution that allowed me to speak to girls, to lads. I became very, for the life and soul of the party, really. And that was just something new to me, and I liked it. But whenever I drank, people used to look at me and think, there's something not quite right with him. And I was always, they could see that there was something, you know, it just wasn't quite right. And people couldn't put the finger on it. And, you know, but I'd be going to college on a morning, and because I didn't like machine coffee, so I used to take a flask of water and a jar of coffee, and that progressed to taking a little shot of whiskey. So I'd have an Irish coffee for breakfast on a morning in class at 19-year-old, and people used to say to me, "That's how you become an alcoholic." I said, "Nah, I'm all right. Don't worry about that. I'll be all right." And this went on. And then I got outside of... We finished college, and it started to get worse. I didn't qualify for university, and I had to stay in my local town, and all my friends left. So that meant I had to find some new friends, and I got on with the wrong lads, you know, and I ended up on the streets, and you know, people would say to me, "You got a problem with drink?" So I just used to change my substance, and that's how I dealt with things. So drugs were a big part of my story, and no male influence in my life. I just used to knock about with all the lads, and we got into all kinds of trouble, but nothing ever too serious. I always walked that line because I'd had a decent upbringing, so I always do right from wrong. And I've heard it said that it's a progressive disease, you know, and my life gradually got worse and worse and worse. The alcohol and the drugs started to take everything away from me, and I became a daily user, and after 16 years, I'm stuck in a world of one. My family have all moved to New Zealand, and I'm the only one left in England. My brother's in America. And I've got myself into such a state that I'm pacing up and down the room, and I just don't know what to do. I can't see a way out. I'm a paranoid, gibbering wreck, and my whole world's just collapsed. My sister rang me just around then because she was pregnant and she was having a baby. And she said to me, "Why don't you come here?" She said, "Mum will pay for your ticket." So my mum bought me a one-way ticket, and I ran away. And I landed in New Zealand. I had a suitcase, a carry-on bag, and 100 yen, which I transferred into 30 New Zealand dollars. And that was my worldly belongings, you know, 32 years old. And that's all I've got to show for life. So, I was recharged and decided I'm on the other side of the world now. Everything's going to be okay. And I came here and I was full of good intentions, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and everything's going to be great. And, oh, yeah, and I'll do this and I'll do that. And, oh, yeah, won't that be great? And, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. My brother-in-law gave me a drink on the second day I was here. And he said, you know, he reaffirmed what I said, you know, everything's going to be okay. And I had two drinks and I stopped and I thought, oh, yeah, you know, it's going to be different here. And very, very quickly, I was back to drinking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd go to work. Thursday, when I got paid, straight back to the bottle shop, and the cycle started again. And I looked back and realised that I was creating the same life here as what I had in England. And I recognised the downward spiral that was facing me. And it took me 9 months to find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been taken to a meeting back in England, but I wasn't ready because I was in the middle of a drug addiction at the time. And this guy had said to me, listen to the similarities and not the differences. And I went to that meeting and I heard all the differences. And when I was listening for the differences, I found every reason why I didn't need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and why this deal wasn't for me. And when I got there, it was some 7 years afterwards when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in New Zealand and I was ready to hear the similarities. I saw God on the wall and that terrified me because it took me straight back to being 11. You know, where I've got this all-fearing God that can just pluck you out of society and that's it, you've gone. That's, you know, I used to think God was like a... He was sat around his boardroom table and he just used to sit and pick on us all. And I thought he was, you know, I thought he was nothing but a bully. And so I was a little bit dubious about this, but I looked at the steps on the wall and I saw that if I could just get through steps 1, 2 and 3, that step 4 became about making the searching and fearless moral inventory. And I decided that that was my solution. I'd forget steps 1, 2 and 3. I'd start at 4, find out what was wrong with me. Then when I've figured out everything that's wrong with me, I can then go and make amends to people in step 9 and then I'll go and carry a message in step 12. And that would do me. I was in for a 3-step program. But found out that that wasn't, that wasn't quite the way that things worked. But what I did learn when I went through the process is that my fear of step 3 stopped me from working step 1 in its entirety. You know, and I got here and I knew I had a problem with drink and I knew my life was unmanageable, but I didn't understand why. And without that understanding, it would just became lip service. So it's like, oh yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. Yeah, yeah, and I don't really want to come to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity because I've still got options. Because really, I don't fully accept that my life is unmanageable because I've still got a job or I can go and do this or whatever it may be, you know, the lies that I would tell myself. And that drove me mad because I always thought I had an element of control. And what I learned is step 1 is about acceptance. And when I get upset, when I get acceptance, I stop. It stops me from battling. And when I stop fighting it, I can just allow the process to happen to me. And when the process happens to me, I realise that I've been trying to apply a solution to my life that's never ever going to work, because the drink and the drugs didn't do what I thought they did. They lied to me. You know, where I thought they were fixing my problems, they didn't. So ultimately, the moral of it is, I need to be here in order to find a way to deal with life on life's terms, because alcohol was only ever a symptom of my problems. It wasn't my problem. You know, alcohol came in the bottle. The ism came in me. I was the problem because I brought me with me. So I found here a great way to live. They've put me on a timer. I have to shut up now. I don't know how I'm supposed to get 36 years into 8 minutes, but we've given it a go. So it's great to be here. This is a wonderful program, and I hope to see you at Buckland's Beach on Wednesday night at 7:30 at the St John's Centre. It would be good to be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
This brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from the Buckland's Beach Group, as you've heard. And if you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, which will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the greater Auckland area. For more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thank you for listening. We will be here again next Sunday at 10:45 a.m. and our AA meeting will have a Te Reo or Pacifica theme. We will close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you, everyone. You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA meeting on air.
masks matter.